Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Prasky. Oh, what a beautiful summer this is turning out to be, even though it's not officially summer yet. It is in my mind, and that makes it a good time to find a hammock and maybe a cool drink and top it all off with a great book. We're going to be visiting with our book doctors today. It's been a while since they've been here, and they're eager to share some of their finds with the rest of us. With us today, Katie Stover is Director of Reader Services at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Katie, nice to have you, as always.
Good morning, Steve.
Jeff Van Gowdy is back. She's a freelance writer, editor, and reviewer. Jeff, how are you?
Good to be here, Steve.
Mark Luce is with the Barstow School. Mark, good to have you.
Thanks for having
and
me.
And Grace Suh is a senior editor at Andrews McMeel. It's good to have you, Grace.
Good morning, Steve.
Welcome. How are the books? Katie, what's going on out there?
Oh, wow. I just got back from BEA a couple of weeks ago. So everything
BEA is?
Oh, Book Expo America.
Oh, of course it is.
It's the biggest convention for all the publishers, and it's global. And I came back with, I think I shipped three boxes of stuff to myself, shipped a box every day, shipped a box of things that if I didn't do it, then they would get ripped off in the shipping area because people do go through your boxes. So everything I have is a galley. They're all forthcoming, and one of them is coming in September, and one of the biggest books this summer, the third in the All Souls trilogy by Deborah Harkness, that's coming next month in July. And that's Book of Life. I'll talk about
that.
Well,
what was the big trend, the big sort of, was there anything sort of topical at this BEA convention?
What I saw that was topical was a lot of accessible science that looks at technology and how it affects our lives, how it affects us physically, how it affects us mentally, how it affects our culture and our behaviors. And one of the books I brought addresses that. But that's what I primarily saw as far as the trends in publishing. It seemed like every publisher had a book like that. I did not see any big fiction breakouts this year, like I saw about 2-3 years ago. And I was talking with some of the other publishers and other librarians who were there. And while we see a lot of strong fiction, we didn't see anything that was just going to jump out of the gate and take readers by storm this year. Now, we could be pleasantly surprised.
Right.
I do hope I am. But I did not find anything like that this year.
Things change in the book world, and they change quickly sometimes, don't they?
They do. So we're going to have a strong fall list of solid nonfiction, solid fiction. But I didn't see anything that was just going to stomp all over the competition.
Okay. Let's go on and take a look at some new books that are out. And Jeff, why don't you take us to The Book of Hours, a new poetry collection.
Okay, this is Kevin Young's eighth collection of original poems, Book of Hours, and he's also edited eight themed anthologies on jazz, blues, food and drink, and he's, I think, arguably one of our best and most important poets, and he grew up in Topeka. He's a Topeka West graduate, and I have a disclaimer here. I have known him for a long time, since he took a gifted workshop with my husband when he was 13. But he has been out on book tour. He was on the Terry Gross Show.
Has
a national reputation. He teaches at Emory University. Atlanta.
Okay. Oh, Emory. Yeah, sure.
Emory, And he's also the curator of a major poetry collection there. So this book is coming out this spring, the 10-year anniversary of his father, who was Paul Young, a Topeka eye doctor, his tragic death in a hunting accident. So this collection of poems really moves through the circle of life. Grief at his father's death, a miscarriage, and then joy at the birth of his son. And so they're very autobiographical poems. And I came very late to poetry, to an appreciation of poetry. But I have come to see that
most
poetry
of us do, it seems like,
can condense image, language, arresting language, emotion in a way that almost no other literary form can do.
I agree with that.
I know we probably have a policy about not reading poetry on book doctors, but anyway.
I'm not aware of that policy.
All right, okay.
But
the first poem is about Father's Day, but the second poem is about his father's dogs, and I'd just like to read the first half. It's called Bereavement. Behind his house, my father's dogs sleep in kennels, beautiful, he built just for them. They do not bark. Do they know he is dead? They wag their tails and head. They beg and are fed. Their grief is colossal and forgetful. Each day they wake seeking his voice, their names. By dusk, they seem to unremember everything. To them, even hunger is a game. For that, I envy. For that, I cannot bear to watch them pacing their cage. I try to remember they love best confined space to feel safe. Each day a saint comes by to feed the pair, and I draw closer the shades. I begun to think of them as my father's other sons, as kin, brothers in paw.
Huh.
Anyway.
Neat.
Kevin came to Topeka this spring because he was the Mike Prince visiting writer. Mike Prince was a longtime school librarian at Topeka West High School, very esteemed, and there's an award named for him that's given annually by the American Library Association.
It's the highest award given to young adult authors in library land, the Mike Prince Award.
Yeah. So he came to read at Washburn, and he read extremely powerfully, and this is a really wonderful book of poems. It's also their, dare I say, accessible, which I like that in poetry. So it's a wonderful book. He's married to Kate Tuttle, who is the daughter of Bill Tuttle, longtime KU American Studies professor.
My teacher.
Huh?
He was my teacher.
Yeah, yeah. And she's actually a book critic for the Boston Globe. She reviews four books every 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, really.
Whoa.
She reads faster than I do. Anyway, but they live in Atlanta, and they're a wonderful family, and this is a wonderful book.
That's The Book of Hours by Kevin Young.
Yep.
Right? Okay. Mark Lewis, let's come to you and talk about a book, The Society of Crossed Keys.
Okay, so a few weeks ago, I went to the movies to see Grand Budapest Hotel, which is the latest Wes Anderson film, and
right.
You might know him from Rushmore or Fantastic Mr. Fox or Royal Tenenbaums. Precious sort of style. And what I didn't know when I went to see the film, which is absolutely charming and fun and set basically in between the wars in a mythical land in the middle of Europe, was that the work was actually based on an Austrian writer named Stefan Zweig. Who, I have to be honest, I had never in my entire life heard of, never seen his name, never came across him. And so I immediately went out and got some of his work because I was so sort of intrigued by this fellow who was born in 1881, was a poet or was a biographer and an essayist and then sort of became a fiction writer. He left Europe in 1934 to stay ahead of the Nazis, emigrated to New York in the 1940s, and then he and his wife supposedly committed double suicide in 1942.
Hmm.
So I'd never heard of this guy, no idea. And what I found was someone who reminds me of a more bubbly and urbane Franz Kafka. They're basically contemporaries. Kafka was born in 1883. Zweig was born in 1881. They live basically in the same area, but where Kafka writes about the downtrodden and the alienated, Zweig writes about the sophisticated. But the thing is they both carry with them sort of a central alienation from the rest of society. And so in particular, I really enjoyed the story called 24 Hours in the Life of a Woman, where there's an argument amongst a group at a nice European hotel, and a young man and an older woman basically have this connection, and then she tells him a story of something that happened to her in her youth, and it's fun and it's engaging and it's heartbreaking, and I really can't wait to read more of his work. So this is a collection of some of his writings, and in the front it has a interview with Wes Anderson and a fellow named George Prochnik, who is the author of Zweig's biography. So, The Society of the Crossed Keys, selections from the writing of Stefan Zweig.
Oh, great pick.
Just a little postscript. There is a brand new biography of Zweig. I just read a review in the New York Times Book Review. Is that the one you're
referring? This is the guy,
yeah. Okay, great.
I don't think there's a lot of biographies of
A.O. Scott wrote a wonderful review of it in the current New York Times.
I don't know how I went through however many years of study of literature and never heard of this guy. I mean, it's very rare that you, if you've done this long enough, that there's someone you actually have never heard of. So,
what a great find.
Exactly.
Well, and for people who liked Grand Budapest Hotel, I mean, the crossed keys is such a central motif in the movie. So,
there you go.
It's a really good connection.
Well, that's the voice of Grace Suh, and she just made the mistake of talking, so now it's her turn. Now you've got to go. So we're talking with our book doctors this morning. Grace Suh, tell us about We Are Called to Rise by Laura McBride.
I'd be happy to. I liked when Katie talked about library land, because that sounds like a nice land to live in.
Yeah.
And I made a visit to library land, and Katie gave me this advance copy from BEA.
Mm.
And she actually gave me a huge stack, and obviously I wasn't able to read it all over the weekend, but I jumped into this one, and it has been a really long time since I have had a page turner that just read itself, because, you know, we're so busy in life, and when do we ever have time to read? Except I always joke 10 minutes before you go to bed, right? Mm-hmm. So you read 8 pages a night. And I have been reading a lot of books that have made me really impatient lately. We had a little email exchange about Donna Tartt's Goldfinch, one of the books that I paid good money for and got really mad about 100 pages into and decided I did not have enough time in my life for the next 750 pages. And
well, it brings up a great subject. Like, if you start a book, mm-hmm. a lot of people feel absolutely compelled to finish it. And you
free yourself from that.
Let go of that.
Let
go
I
of
have
that.
Life is too short. I give people. Yeah, called get out of this book free cards.
Really? Life is you do, really?
Yes, I do.
You let go of the guilt.
I have little cards I give to people.
Oh,
get
no
out of this
way.
Book free.
If
you know, Monopoly, get out of this.
I want my money back. I want my money back because I paid for that book.
If someone tells you that they're 150 in and nothing's happening, it's like, you know what? It's time to get out.
Yeah. That's
I think
right.
100's a fair.
That's right.
100 is very fair.
That's how I felt. The Art of Fielding. Everybody loved The Art of Fielding. Everyone loved it. And
yeah,
I'm
I
reading
like
it. And I'm like,
that book.
And I'm like,
yeah.
What,
you and I,
what,
and
do,
and I
what do I
that.
Like about it? Like, what? Yeah. Why do people like this book?
I do
think, though, I am honor bound, though, to read the first 50.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I
she
got 100,
that.
Maybe even 150 pages in, and I thought to myself, I don't care what they say.
Yeah, you're done.
I am not going to read this book. I do not like this book. And I was really impatient with it. And I thought to myself, she might have time in her life for this, but I do not. And I have felt that way about a couple of books. I started that Joshua Ferris book, To Rise Again at a Decent Hour. The only reason I read it is because I sat next to him on the plane, and I felt, you know, kind of compelled to. And I thought, you know what? The last thing I need is to read about a man who does nothing because he has an existential crisis. And I'm not going to do that. And so to bring us to this book, We Are Called to Rise by Laura McBride. She is one of those people, and this happens every once in a while, who didn't write her entire adult life. Raised children, had a career, the children left the house, and she sat down and wrote this book. And
she should have been writing all along, it sounds like.
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
No, Steve.
It took till now for her to be ready to write this book.
Well, you know what? Because it's a book about something. Mm-hmm. And it's a book that says something, and it's not a book that's just 800 pages of navel gazing, which I no longer have the time for, and I used to. But I don't. I'm impatient with that now. Because I'm older and wiser, and so are you, Steve. And so this is a book about so many of the things that we think about in everyday life. It's one of those, you know, those movies like Crash, where there's all these disparate storylines, and then they diverge and converge, and then and
you mean the bad
separate.
Crash, not the good Crash, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
The
Just
bad
checking.
Crash. Well, it's one of those. So there's each chapter is told from the point of view of a separate character. So there's Avis, a woman who grew up in a really first of all, I will say the setting is Las Vegas, and it's not the Las Vegas that we tourists know. It's the Las Vegas of natives.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's Avis, who grew up with an 18-year-old mother who went through abusive boyfriend after abusive boyfriend and grew up, you know, one of those kids that you read about in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But she has managed to have this healthy marriage and bring up kids, and she lives in the middle class, but she always feels like a fraud. Because she didn't grow up in the middle class. She didn't grow up in soccer league, and she didn't grow up even going to school. And so she feels like she's faking it her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a little boy, Bashkim, who is the child of Albanian political refugees. And then there's an Iraqi vet, Louise. And so it's the story of these people that you read about in the newspaper. And in fact, some of their stories get into the newspaper, but it's about the real people behind them. And she writes with such grace and such humanity, and the characters are so real. And yet it's small moments, it's poetic moments, it's the story behind the newspaper stories. And then the stories converge, and at the end, improbably, there's a little bit of a happy ending, which, you know, the cynic in me wants to say,
come on,
when does that happen?
Yeah. Right.
When do judges make right decisions? And when do social workers go above and beyond? But thank God they did, because I really needed a book like this. And I just think it's a book that people are going to really enjoy, but it's also a book that makes you think about the things that you're thinking about anyway.
Has it been published yet? Is it out?
Yes, it came out June 3rd.
So just recently.
So it just came out. It's called We Are Called to Rise by
Laura McBride. Yeah, well, great suggestion, Grace.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, good deal. Well, if you just are joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. The Book Doctors are in the house. We're talking about some very good books to read during this beautiful summer we're all enjoying. What recent book would you recommend for a good summer read? You can tell us and the Book Doctors. Just go to KCUR Up to Date. You can email us uptodate@kcur.org or call us 816-235-2888. And let's move on here. Jeff, let's go to Book of Hours. We already talked about Book of Hours. Congratulations, by the way. Some thoughts on kindness.
Absolutely.
By George Saunders. Yes.
That's okay. Well, we are in commencement season, as we all know. And I like speeches, and I like speeches that inspire. And I was privileged, actually, to be in the audience that heard Michelle Obama speak to the Topeka seniors last month. And she gave a wonderful gift to those seniors. She said, "You are special. Despite Kansas's bland image, you go to a very diverse Topeka public school system." And she spoke on the 60th anniversary of Brown v. Board. She said, "You don't have to go to the Supreme Court to make a difference. You can make a difference at your dinner table by challenging stereotypes." So I just got in my little mini summary of Michelle Obama there that I wanted to do. So, but anyway, recently in the publishing industry, speeches that are well-received have been put in between book covers, and this is a recent one. Congratulations, by the way, by George Saunders, Some Thoughts on Kindness.
Who was here talking about that speech on any number of months ago. What a delightful guy
excellent.
He was. Yeah.
Well, it's a charming book. It's all of 26 pages of text padded with, you know, big margins and illustrations, but I enjoyed it thoroughly. And is it brilliant? No. Is it memorable? Yes. I liked his main theme, which is that what he regrets most in life are his failures of kindness.
Yes, I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful
and
theme.
And he said that he thought a good life goal could be summed up in four words, try to be kinder. And I believe that. So I think it's a wonderful book, and I think it'd make a great graduation gift. It's not the first of these books that I have purchased. Ann Patchett's What Now is also a wonderful book. It's the commencement address she gave at Sarah Lawrence, which is her alma mater. And it was wildly popular, so she expanded it out so that it's a little heftier than George's book. But what she says is what now or what next is not just – those just aren't questions for graduates. Those are questions we ask ourselves our entire lives as we're reinventing ourselves. Anna Quinlan's A Short Guide to Happy Life I didn't like quite as well, but it has an interesting backstory. This is the speech that Anna Quinlan did not get to give at Villanova. In 1999, she was asked to be the commencement speaker, and because of her views on abortion rights, a number of students threatened to protest, and she withdrew. And a really disappointed student asked for the text, and it went on the internet and then became a book. So I didn't like it quite as well. Oh, about George Saunders' speech. This was put on the New York Times website. He probably talked about this on the program. And within 3 days, it had been shared a million times.
Yeah.
So it obviously really. And I think it'd make a better gift than a, you know, $25.
Well, that's just great. Well,
and cheaper, too.
There you go.
It's a phenom.
Yeah.
That seems like, I mean, I got no beef with George Saunders and with that speech, and it'd be great to see David Foster Wallace's commencement address at Kenyon, which is to me is like that's the best one.
Apparently, there's some parallels.
But like, I mean, this is such a clear cash grab by publishers. I mean, 26 pages, seriously, and what's it run? $16.
Let's see here. Well, I had some coupons.
I mean, you had some coupons. Did you get it from Libraryland?
I don't know.
I've got a hard time.
You got a beef with that.
I've got to seriously. I mean, if you can get it on the internet for free, you know, like why are you going
to
spend?
Sometimes if you give it to somebody as a gift and they wouldn't read the link, but they'll
right
it because and you know and they have it and sometimes having it in hand.
I understand
makes
all
it,
that. I understand
makes it more
all
tangible.
That. But I don't know. Like reading a speech that Anna Quinlan didn't give, I'm just not interested.
Yeah.
But one that I was looking for is Neil Gaiman's Make Art. Right. Which I watched on the internet, and he gave it to the Philadelphia School of Arts. That was a brilliant speech, but I wasn't able to find it.
So,
Barnes & Noble. Plus, so I didn't have enough money.
So now when authors give their commencement address, it's basically another way for them to get paid for giving that address.
Well, okay.
And what's wrong with that, Mark?
But you know what?
I think commercializing graduation, I got a problem. I mean, I know it is commercialized, but I on a fundamental level, this makes me – I don't like this.
I understand that. I wish somebody would take Michelle Obama's speech, though, and – put it between covers for
I'm
the
Topeka sure it
graduates.
Won't. It's probably on the press as we speak.
That could be. That could be.
Mark, you know what? Any chance that writers have to make more money, I'm all for it.
I'm
with Green.
Yeah, and having given one of those suckers before, it is hard to come up with, say, something original. And what you know, Jeff just described are some original thoughts on a very, very difficult task. I think I agree with Grace on this one.
I'm all for writers getting paid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that.
And this is a wider audience.
But every time that a writer gets paid, so does the publisher. So if a writer can figure out a way to get paid on their own without the publisher taking a lion's share of the proceeds, I'm more for that.
Okay. Katie Stover, let's go to one of yours
Katie
here.
Katie Stover's shaking her head.
Yeah, before we go to a break here. A Deadly Wandering, A Tale of Tragedy and Redemption in the Age of Attention. This author is Matt Richtel.
Yes, Matt Richtel.
Richtel.
He spent a lot of time correcting all of our pronunciation at BEA when he was giving his talk about this book. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist from the New York Times, and he did a series of articles called Driven to Distraction in 2008-2009, and that's for which he won the Pulitzer. And he's taken the inspiration for those articles, and he's written this book. And he's not just talking about how our technology affects or how driving while talking on a cell phone or texting is dangerous and why it's bad for traffic patterns and human life. He looks into the science of how the technology is affecting our brains and altering our behavior. It's easy for us to accept the fact that technology is probably altering our thought patterns, but how is it affecting our behavior on a social level? And that's what Matt researches in this book.
Now, that's interesting to me.
Yeah, and this is not – so this is not just a techno true crime story. It opens with a terrible car accident. We've read this before. Teen, young 20-something, they're on the phone, they're texting. They don't see the red light. They don't see the stop sign. They blow through, broadside somebody, and now someone is dead. This accident was especially tragic because what we're finding most of the time with these teens is that they're good teens. They've never had a traffic ticket. They're contributing to society. They're good students. And the two people that he killed were rocket scientists. Seriously. Mm. They built rocket boosters. And after the accident, when the police approach the teenager, Reggie, he says he can't remember what he was doing before his Chevy Tahoe hit their little Saturn. One of the troopers on the scene is driving Reggie away and notices that Reggie pulls out his phone just like to let his mom know where he is. And he's one-handed texting. And the trooper notices he's a one-hander. There's something else going on here. And that's where the true crime elements enter the story. And Matt Richtel goes back and forth. It's the how are the cops going to figure out exactly how this accident occurred. And then the investigation leads them to Reggie's phone records. And that's where they match up the time of the accident with the time stamps on Reggie's phone calls and texts. And then Richtel consults two neuroscientists, Dr. Adam Ghazali. He's a neuroscientist who tells him that attention is a complicated thing. And in A Deadly Warning, Matt Richtel is showing us that how our attention spans and brain functions are changing as our technology advances. And it all begins, he says, with one, what he calls smart, dumb question. Why are people using their phones while driving? And before we all jump in and say, that's wrong, that's stupid, why are we doing that? That's a given. What Matt Richtel wants to know is, why do we think now that's okay? What is it about our technology that lets us think it's okay for our attention to be pulled in multiple directions?
Mm-hmm.
So
point.
There's multiple viewpoints going on in this book. There's the teen driver, there's surviving family members of the rocket scientists, the neuroscientists, and even the prosecutors of the case. It's got a really speedy, suspenseful pace. If you follow this case in the New York Times, and it happened, I think you wrote about it maybe in 2008, then you know what the outcome is, but it's the way Richtel writes that keeps you going with what's going to happen to these people afterwards. Where are their lives now? What happens to Reggie? What do the neuroscientists find out? And there's clear, crisp, direct writing in here. What I like about this book is that anyone who reads it, you'll have plenty of info, scientific, anecdotal, to discuss technology, attention, and its impact on society at your next fancy cocktail party.
Wow.
It was just, it's amazing writing from this Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. And that's A Deadly Wandering by Matt Richtel.
Boy, sounds great. That's a topical, interesting book that very, sounds like. Yeah.
All those billboards we're seeing, don't text and drive.
Yeah.
And this book will bring it home for all of us. This is not just limited to teens. The accidents are happening to teens, but I know so many adults who text and cell phone and drive, and even hands-free technology is not good in the car.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with our book doctors. We'll turn to Kate Atkinson's Case Histories and also a book, The Elements of Style, The Old Chestnut by White and Strunk. We'll talk about a new edition of that book that's out and a whole bunch more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're having a good visit with our book doctors, Katie Stovert, Jeff Van Gowdy, Mark Luce, and Grace Supp. If you want to join our conversation with a great recommendation for a good summer read, 816-235-2888 is our number. Again, 816-235-2888. And Mark Luce, let's go on with you here and a book, Essex County.
Well, is it okay if I go with a different one instead?
Well, you can.
Okay, so
there.
Katie's got this. We might have to put Katie in a seatbelt because she's gonna jump out of her chair when she hears it. So, what I would like to talk about is Colson Whitehead's Noble Hustle, which is Poker, Beef Jerky, and Death is the subtitle. And I actually listened to this book as I was walking.
You did not.
It's Katie's influence.
Yeah.
I actually have. I'm not quite done. I had read it actually when it came out, but I've listening to it as I go for a stroll. So Colson Whitehead is an author that his debut novel, The Intuitionist, came out 15 years ago. Absolutely phenomenal. And he's had a couple decent books and a couple not so decent books. So he got asked by Grantland they will stake him $10,000 to go and play in the World Series of Poker. Mm-hmm. And he's a player probably like most people. It's like he'll play with his buddies for $20, like a $20
pot,
yeah, you know,
sure.
Or like everybody brings $20 and you play poker for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And tell lies. And so he is coming straight off of a divorce and he's not in a very good headspace. And so he starts taking trips down from Brooklyn to Atlantic City to kind of get in the mode of playing and to learn, and then he goes and plays in the World Series of Poker. And the thing that I like about it, it certainly is navel-gazing. I mean, he's basically having a midlife crisis right in front of you, and he talks at length about, he calls it the United States of anhedonia, which is where you can't take pleasure from things that are pleasureful.
Mm-hmm.
Gambling, drink, you know, relations. And as much as I like him, I mean, I really, really like him. There's a part, and while it's fun to hear about poker and different hands and all the crazy stuff that happens and the way that he characterizes the different types of poker players, I mean, at its core, he's getting paid to go to write this piece, and there's a lot of filler. There's a lot of filler that's a lot about him, and while that's okay, I think that this type of thing has been done, it's been done before, and I think that it's been done as well. I'm not going to remember. There's a wonderful book about a guy who was staked money to go around and play pool. I'm going to forget the title. But those kind of books I like. This one is just – it wasn't quite as good. But I will say, listening to it, I actually enjoyed it more because he read it, and he's so deadpan and so – I mean, on some level, self-loathing – that there's an element of wonderful humor in it.
Hmm.
That's wonderful. When audiobooks are read by the author, you get an added level of what their intent is.
Yeah.
There's only the author can give a professional narrator tell the professional narrator this is my intent, and then it's really that's hard to to capture. But authors who read their own works who are good at it, they give the reader an added element to the book that you won't get just by reading, because you don't really know what's in the author's mind while they're writing. And that's marvelous, Mark, that,
yeah, so
that you
listen
like this.
I
have this book, in print. I haven't read it yet. But now, now I'll listen to it and I'll give away my galley.
It started as a magazine series, right?
It was for Grantland.
Yeah.
And it ran last year. And I think it seems to me that he added to it. I mean, I read the series when it came out. I was surprised to see him writing for them. But then when I saw what he's writing about and saw that he'd been divorced, it's like, okay, like, yeah, this is I've got nothing else to do and I'm going to make some money.
Sort of a little literary celebrity footnote. They're best friends, Kevin Young, Colson Whitehead.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's ironic.
I tell you, that The Intuitionist is one of the best first novels I think that I've ever – I mean, it's so interesting and intriguing, and I mean, I can't recommend that book highly enough.
That book from Mark Luce is Noble Hustle, Poker, Beef Jerky, and Death by Colson Whitehead, right? Okay.
Yes.
We have an email here from Jane at uptodate@kcur.org. I recently read Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. The book ends when she is 16, just had a child. Has anyone written a biography of her that would let us know how she got from that point to her mature life?
She did. She wrote a whole series of memoirs. I can't remember the second one
That
series.
Right.
And she is most wonderful chronicler of her own life. And I don't think I would want to read someone else's words about Maya Angelou. I would want to read just those five books.
Good
can't
point.
Remember what the second one is. It's not Singing and Swinging and
That's
Getting Married Like
one.
Christmas. That's
yeah.
the third one.
I can't remember.
Maybe
either.
We'll try and get it here. But the point is, there's lots of autobiographies
yes,
out there.
Yes, read
here.
All yeah. of Maya Angelou's memoirs continuing after that one.
Yeah.
It's powerful stuff.
And for our listeners, what book are you looking forward to reading this summer? Tweet your answer to KCUR Up to Date. Let's move on here. Grace Suh, let's go to Kate Atkinson's Case Histories.
Oh, good. At the risk of sounding as cranky as Mark Luce,
that's reaching.
I will say,
I'm really not cranky.
You know, I really have been impatient lately with the stack of books by my bedside, and all I ask is for a gripping, super exciting, thrilling, plot-filled book
uh-huh.
that's all written really well.
Not much.
Yeah, good luck.
You know, I've been bored by a lot of the stuff that's been touted lately. So this book is 2004, but I'm really thrilled with it. Kate Atkinson has a brand new book out called Life After Life that is on my bedside and I'm ready to read. But I wanted to go back and read this one. This is the first of, she wrote, I think, two or three books before this, and they were well-received but only moderately well-selling literary fiction. And then she turned to mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And in theory, I like mystery, but I find them so often not well written. Well, this one has this blurb here by Stephen King, not just the best novel I read this year, but the best mystery of the decade.
Wow.
I defy any reader not to feel a combination of delight and amazement. And I will say that I fully agree.
Wow.
So this was written in 2004, Case Histories. It has three intertwining stories, and it's set in Cambridge, England. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the phrase for college towns of townies and gownies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a very townie and gownie story. So there are the four young daughters of a very well-known mathematician. And the youngest daughter goes missing in 1970. And that's just a mystery that, you know, is never solved, and it's a cold case. And then there's a middle-class solicitor, a lawyer, we would call him in our country, whose daughter is an intern in his office, and on her first day, a man runs into the office and knifes her dead, and nobody knows why. And then there's sometime in the mid-70s, a woman who suddenly axes her husband to death, and they're both young. And these are all cold cases. And then there's Jackson Brody, who is our hero. He's an ex-cop who is very working class and has a big chip on his shoulder about being working class and living in this city where it's just flooded with tourists, Americans who come in to see Cambridge and they want to see the beautiful buildings and they never see the working class people, the townies who live there and never have any access to the glories of Cambridge. And despite himself, you know, as is the case in these stories, he gets pulled in and solves the mysteries, and you just fall in love with this man. He is such a decent, honorable, you know, despite himself, charming guy. And I got to the end, and I was so happy. I was just absolutely thrilled to have this such a readable, fun, rewarding book, and a book that, again, like We Are Called to Rise, deals with so many of the topics that we think about today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so happy because there are three more. So there's One Good Turn, published in 2006. When Will There Be Good News, published in 2008. Started Early, Took My Dog, 2010. And there's a British television series based on these, and I can't wait to watch them.
Wow.
And then read Life After Life. So I'm going to have a big Kate Atkinson summer. And just to know that there's all this good stuff to read, it just makes me really happy.
Yeah, no, I get that. That's Kate Atkinson's Kay Sisters. Anybody else read this book? All this high praise from
I've read Started
stuff.
Early, Took My Dog. I listened to it. It was wonderful in audio. And I was talking to Grace about that on Friday. And I think I've read Kay Sisters many, many years ago. I loved Started Early, Took My Dog. Just the scene where Jackson gets the dog is so heartwarming and really tells you a lot about his character.
Yeah. We had Jane had asked us about Maya Angelou. Here's some other books that she wrote. Gather Together in My Name. Was that the one you were at number two, I think?
No, that's not number two. But, well, it might be.
Singing and Swinging.
That's three.
That's three. And Getting Merry Like Christmas.
Yes, that's the fourth one. Okay,
that's
the order of her memoirs.
Right.
And The Heart of a Woman as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it is Angelou, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's not Angelou.
Oh, Angelou, right.
You said it right.
Yeah. I did. Okay, well, good. I hope I did. Yeah. Okay, let's move on here. Let's go to Katie Stover. Let's go back to you and Of All the Gin Joints by Mark Bailey.
Oh, this is a fun book. It's summer. Everyone's fixing porch and patio cocktails. So why not add a little glamour with the infused bitters to the gin? So I brought Of All the Gin Joints by Mark Bailey. And it's just one of those fun anecdotal recipe books. The author collects some very lively stories of Hollywood's greatest stars and their love and laugh affairs with booze. And so he takes us through Hollywood's history through the stars and what they drink and the funny things they've said. I pulled out Luella Parsons, that influential gossip columnist who is also a well-known hypocrite. And she would moralize in her columns about crumbling marriages, and she'd been married three times. She lashed out at Clara Bow for her gambling problem and would lose thousands in a weekend playing the ponies. But Parsons was famous for the parties she threw, and people only went because they were afraid to not go to her parties. But she would go, and her husband, Docky, he was a doctor to the starlets, and any medical problems they needed to have taken care of, he did that sort of doctor work. And the two of them would just get completely soused and embarrass themselves, and no one ever wrote about that, but it was common knowledge. So this book has stories like that, little biographical snippets of these famous personages' relationships with alcohol, and then one really good story you could share about an alcohol-infused evening, and then some little sidebars about famous bars, and always a cocktail recipe. The Humphrey Bogart one just cracked me up. He walks into a bar with two stuffed pandas, and I am not about to give you the punchline of the joke here. And he really did have two stuffed pandas. He and his best friend would go out carousing without their wives, and they brought these huge life-size stuffed pandas to sit in the table for four so that women wouldn't hit on them. Well, some young woman decided to hit on Humphrey Bogart anyway, and she picked up the panda, and he reached to pull it back, and apparently it turned into a tug of war. The woman falls over and sues Bogey for pushing her in the bar. So he winds up in court 4 days later, defending himself and his stuffed panda. And the judge throws it all out, and as he's leaving the courtroom, a reporter asks if he was drunk at the time, and his response is, well, isn't everyone at 4 a.m.? I thought, well, yeah. Oh, so dear. It's full of quips, smart cocktail recipes, a lot of ribald humor, for which we want to remember Hollywood fondly. And I was reading this at the Record Bar last night, and someone next to me said, you know, it's a good thing old Hollywood didn't have the internet to make all their exploits viral. Yeah. Viral. And I thought, yeah, that's true. So bust this out when you're having one of your summer cocktail parties, and just, you know, pick it up, put it down, share a story, and go back to drinking your PBRs.
Of all the gin joints by Mark Bailey.
Mark is taking it now. Yeah. Of all the gin joints by Mark Bailey.
That sounds
Mark
like
Luce
a good
is
one.
Flipping through.
Yeah. We're visiting with our book doctors this morning about good summer reads. If you want to join our conversation again, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Jeff Ann Gowdy here and the elements of style. Speaking of old chestnuts, here we go.
You know, this is such a charming book, and I didn't know anything about this illustrated edition, which was published in 2005. A friend tricked me and said, do you have the illustrated edition of The Elements of Style? I need to borrow it for our next blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, I only have one from 1972. Well, it turned out she had already bought it for me, and it is a wonderful book.
How can you illustrate the...
Illustrate by Mara Kalman.
How do you illustrate The Elements of Style?
They are the most whimsical paintings that became illustrations that are off the examples, some of the examples of William Strunk. He noticed a large stain right in the center of the rug. Shows a man keeled over on the rug. They are charming and whimsical. And Mara Kalman was not aware of the elements of style, like most of us who went to J school were. And she was in a thrift shop in Cape Cod and happened upon it and knew she had to illustrate it. And then she talked to a young friend of hers who was a composer who wrote an opera based on the elements of style, which is apparently performed at the New York Public Library with people in the balconies reading these rules out loud. But, you know, the elements of style, my little 1972 $1.25 classic.
Yeah.
With the blue cover?
The blue cover. I loved it so much. And it was wonderful to revisit it. This new edition, it's new to me, well, 2005, has a wonderful foreword by Roger Angel, the New Yorker writer. Turns out E.B. White was his stepfather.
Sure, yeah.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that either.
He said the first person that he ever watched at work writing. And he describes E.B. White sending his copy off to the New Yorker and going, it isn't good enough. I wish it were better. Such a brilliant stylist.
Yeah.
And E.B. White's introduction is from the 1979 introduction. It's really charming. He had William Strunk at Cornell. And William Strunk was a very declarative, very definite guy. And they had a little textbook, The Elements of Style. And then 38 years after White graduated, they asked him to expand it and put out a new edition. It's still going strong. But he said that Strunk was such a stickler for word economy that he would often finish his lectures with time to spare. Mm-hmm. And so he took to reciting his rules three times. So like Rule 17, he'd say, Rule 17, omit needless words. Omit needless words. Omit needless words. Kind of ironic, thereby padding, you know, his lecture. But I just looked at the 57 illustrations and absolutely loved it. And then I went through and just read it like a book, even though it's a rule book. And I found it bracing. I mean, bracing. Like, I'm sure you remember this, Steve. Vigorous writing is concise.
Yeah.
A sentence should contain no unnecessary words, a paragraph no unnecessary sentences, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's just like I read it yesterday. So, also,
got one in my office.
Never had heard of Mara Kalman, and she, it turns out, has lots of books to her credit, 18 children's books. She's collaborated with Daniel Handler. She's also illustrated Michael Pollan's food rules, so she likes to illustrate rule books.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go and get of her books.
She did a great book a few years ago called The Pursuit of Happiness, which basically is sort of like a celebration of America. It was really, I mean, hardback, really fun. And to this day, my favorite little kid's book is this one called What Pete Ate, A to Z. And it's this dog named Pete, and he basically eats everything. So it's an alphabet book, but he eats it. And then in the next book, Smarty Pants, Pete at School, Pete the dog eats the encyclopedia and gets really smart and goes to school and answers all the questions dressed up as the kid's cousin. But then he helps them with their homework and everything. But then, of course, it like wears off.
Yeah.
Absolutely hysterical.
Well, that's what happens to me. People say you host a talk show every day. You've got to be really smart. Well, you are for that hour,
right.
And then you walk out the door and it's all gone. But that's the story of my life. Let's go to some phone calls here with our book doctors, Kate from Fairway. Kate, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks, Kate.
I just had an example of a good summer read.
Great.
I don't know if any of you are familiar with Michael Korita, Korita. He was, I believe, a police reporter or like a beat reporter in Bloomington, Indiana, but he has a couple of really amazing thrillers out. The first one I read was So Cold the River, and it's a little bit ghostly, but it's really thrilling, and you forget that you're about to read a ghost story because the characters and the setting are so wonderful. And then his other one that I've read is called The Cypress House. It takes place in, I believe, Louisiana, maybe in the 30s. And then he just came out with another one that I think is coming out today. So that's why he's back on my radar. But if you want something that's really thrilling and exciting, and he's just a fantastic writer, I highly recommend anything by him.
Kate, the first title of the ghost type book was what?
It's So Cold the River.
So Cold the River? Okay.
And then my other favorite of his is The Cypress House. So, I highly recommend Michael Corita.
Kate, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. That's great.
Thank you.
I'm writing them down. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Jeffrey from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi. Thanks a lot. I was hoping in this case you might be able to even suggest a book for me. I'd love to have something along the lines of what you mentioned earlier and texting or talking and driving. Maybe just a broader, what technology has done in the last 10 or 15 years. You talked about Drunk Tank Pink before, and I just love that book. And anything in those kind of lines, too, and the effect we've had from it.
Hmm. So, Jeffrey, thanks. Let's see what we can stir up here. Any thoughts, panel?
Nothing's coming to mind right at the moment, Steve. And that's because this is sort of it's a new area for journalists to study. And that makes sense that we're beginning to see all of those books now because mm-hmm. the scientists have needed years to study the effects.
Sure.
So, Jeff, look this summer for a number of books that talk about technology and its effects on our brains and our behavior patterns. I'm drawing a blank on the other two I saw.
I think one thing, too, is if you're interested in basically in science or science of the mind, Steve Pinker is very anyone can read him and understand things. And that's not always the case with
science
writing. Steve Pinker in the internet.
How the mind works. How the mind works.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's one on language. He's got a whole bunch of different ones, but it's science writing that is super smart and very accessible.
Cool. Great suggestion. Denise from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on with the Book Doctors. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I wanted to recommend a book that I just read in the past few months, but it's been out a little over a year, and it is called On the Rocks. It is a first published book by an author who is in her 70s, Susan Hallgarth, and she was an English teacher, and Willa Cather is one of the characters in this murder mystery. And it's incredibly well documented, historical information, beautifully written. A really, really nice read.
Hmm. Okay, Denise, thank you very much. Trudy emailed us these recommendations. One is fiction, All the Names by Dinois Mengistu, if I'm saying that right. The second one is nonfiction, The Heir Apparent, A Life of Edward VII, A Playboy Prince by Jane Ridley. Okay. Let's see. We have a couple minutes left here, so let's go quickly. Jeff, what's your next one, Jeff? Just go quick.
Yeah, okay. This book, Where'd You Go, Bernadette, by Maria Simple, was published 2 years ago, and Grace disagrees with me.
I liked it.
But it has really had legs. It's been consistently on the bestseller list, and when I was in Barnes & Noble, it had it as a beach read.
Okay.
So it's satire with heart, and maybe what explains this popular is Jonathan Franzen blurbed it. I tore through this book with heedless pleasure.
Wow. Mark Luce.
Hip Hop Family Tree. It's an oversized graphic, basically comic book that traces the origins of hip hop from 1975 to 1981. It's drawn by a guy named Ed Pisker, who did a book called WYSIWYG. So Fab Five Freddy, Afrika Bambaataa, all of the cool stuff that started hip hop. It's absolutely stunning.
Grace.
The Perfect World by Edward P. Jones. It's old. It won a Pulitzer Prize, but it's about free African-Americans who owned slaves. And I always avoided reading it because I thought it would be too heavy. It is a fantastic, charming, despite the subject, funny and human read.
And the title again is what?
The Perfect World by Edward Jones.
Katie Stover.
The Book of Life by Deborah Harkness, the last entry in her All Souls trilogy that started with The Discovery of Witches and Shadow of Night. Its laydown date is July 15th. I do have a galley. Please don't mug me outside the radio station for it. It came with a card that says, no spoilers, please. Please keep your advanced reader's copy only for your booksellers and librarians until July 15th. But it's going to tie up all the loose ends between Diana the Witch, Matthew the Vampire, and it's not as trite as that sounds. Mark, stop making that face. It's a nice blend of history and fantasy and academic and literary fiction. So.
All right. Well, Katie Silver, awesome. Jeff Van Gowdy, Mark Luce, and Grace Saw, thank you all for coming in. Always
thanks
a good conversation.
Thank you so much.
You guys. Thanks
oh,
a lot.
What a pleasure.
That was fun.